In 1999, Stephen Chbosky released a novel that would quietly reshape the young adult literary landscape. The Perks of Being a Wallflower arrived without fanfare, yet gradually built a devoted following through word-of-mouth recommendations. By the time the film adaptation starring Emma Watson and Logan Lerman premiered in 2012, the book had already achieved cult classic status among millennials. What makes this epistolary novel so enduring? Perhaps it's the raw honesty with which it portrays adolescent struggles with mental health, sexuality, and identity, topics that were far less openly discussed when it was published. Or maybe it's the protagonist Charlie's unique voice, observant, introspective, and painfully sincere. The novel has been embraced by celebrities from Ezra Miller to Lady Gaga, who have cited its profound impact on their lives. Despite being banned in some school districts for its frank treatment of difficult themes, the book continues to resonate with new generations of readers who find in Charlie's letters a reflection of their own search for belonging. The novel opens with a series of letters from Charlie, a thoughtful and introspective freshman, to an anonymous friend whom he's never met but believes will listen without judgment. Charlie explains he's writing anonymously because he needs someone to confide in after experiencing significant trauma. In his first letter, dated August 25, 1991, he reveals that his friend Michael committed suicide the previous spring, leaving him isolated and confused. Charlie describes the awkward aftermath, guidance counselor sessions where nobody knew what to say, teachers treating him differently, and his own inability to understand why Michael did it. Charlie introduces his family, a football-playing older brother away at college, a pretty sister heading to college soon, a mother who cries easily, and a hard-working father. He also mentions his Aunt Helen, his favorite person, who lived with them after something very bad happened to her, and who died in a car accident when Charlie was 7. This loss clearly still haunts him. As Charlie begins high school, he feels increasingly isolated. He observes how his former friend Susan changed over summer, getting her braces removed, growing prettier, and now ignores him in the hallways. After defending himself against a bully named Sean, Charlie breaks down crying, requiring his sister to drive him home. Though he wasn't punished since it was self-defense, other students now look at him strangely. Charlie's loneliness is palpable as he describes his siblings being busy with their own lives and his parents hoping he'll earn an academic scholarship since they can barely afford his sister's college. Charlie finds solace in his advanced English class, where his teacher Bill recognizes his intelligence and assigns him special books beyond the curriculum. Charlie devours To Kill a Mockingbird, declaring it his favorite book, and Bill begins mentoring him. These books become Charlie's companions during his isolation, helping him process his complex emotions and connect with characters who feel as deeply as he does. Charlie's life undergoes a profound transformation when he meets Patrick and Sam, step-siblings who embrace him unconditionally, despite, or perhaps because of, his social awkwardness. Their first encounter occurs at a football game, where Charlie, weary of his perpetual solitude, musters the courage to approach Patrick, a senior known throughout the school by the peculiar nickname Nothing, a moniker that speaks to the casual cruelty of high school hierarchies. Patrick, rather than dismissing the younger student, introduces Charlie to his stepsister Sam, whose very pretty green eyes, the kind that don't make a big deal about themselves, immediately capture Charlie's attention. Beyond her physical beauty, Charlie is drawn to an inherent kindness in Sam that resonates with his own sensitive nature. Their initial bonding takes place at Big Boy Restaurant, where Patrick and Sam create a safe space for Charlie through simple but meaningful gestures. They chain smoke with casual confidence while asking Charlie genuine questions about his life, interests, and thoughts. Charlie is particularly touched by their conscious effort to avoid inside jokes, a common social weapon that had previously left him feeling excluded. His silent relief upon learning that Patrick and Sam are step-siblings rather than romantic partners reveals his nascent feelings for Sam, though he's barely able to acknowledge them even to himself. Through Patrick and Sam, Charlie is inducted into a circle of friends who represent everything he's been missing, authenticity, acceptance, and the courage to live truthfully. His first party at Bob's house becomes a pivotal moment in his social evolution. When he unknowingly consumes a pot brownie and experiences his first high, the group treats his innocent mistake with amused affection rather than mockery. This same night, Charlie stumbles upon Patrick and Brad, the school's star quarterback, sharing a secret kiss, a discovery that cements his position as a trusted confidant within the group. The moment when Patrick christens him a wallflower becomes particularly poignant, acknowledging Charlie's observant nature not as a flaw, but as a gift. You see things, keep quiet about them, and understand. The narrative reaches its emotional crescendo during what becomes known as the tunnel scene. Sam stands in the back of her pickup truck while driving through the Fort Pitt Tunnel, Fleetwood Mac's Landslide playing on the radio, a moment that transcends ordinary experience. Charlie's description of feeling infinite captures the transformative power of true belonging. The wind whips through Sam's hair, the lights of the tunnel streak past, and Charlie experiences perhaps his first moment of pure, unfiltered joy. This scene serves as a perfect metaphor for his journey from isolation to connection, from observation to participation. While Charlie never completely sheds his wallflower nature, it's too fundamentally part of who he is, these friendships provide him with a bridge between his internal world and the external one. Through Patrick, Sam, and their friends, he learns that being different isn't a sentence to solitude, but can be a pathway to finding one's true tribe. Charlie's journey through adolescent love and sexuality is fraught with confusion, desire, and missteps. His unrequited love for Sam forms the emotional core of the novel. Though he's clearly infatuated with her, Sam establishes boundaries, explaining he's too young for her. When Charlie confesses to having an inappropriate dream about Sam, she responds kindly but firmly, establishing boundaries while maintaining their friendship. Meanwhile, Charlie begins dating Mary Elizabeth, a Buddhist girl from their friend group who asked him to the Sadie Hawkins dance. Their relationship quickly becomes one-sided. Mary Elizabeth dominates conversations, talks without listening, and seems more interested in showing off her knowledge than in genuine connection. Charlie feels trapped, unable to express his true feelings because he doesn't want to hurt her. The situation comes to a dramatic head during a game of truth or dare when Patrick dares Charlie to kiss the prettiest girl in the room. Instead of kissing Mary Elizabeth, who sits right beside him, Charlie kneels in front of Sam and kisses her. This moment of honesty destroys his relationship with Mary Elizabeth and temporarily fractures his friendship with the entire group. Through Patrick, Charlie gains insight into the complexities of gay relationships in early 1990s America. Patrick's secret relationship with Brad, the football quarterback, reveals the painful reality of homophobia and internalized shame. After Brad's father catches them together and beats Brad with a belt, Brad publicly rejects Patrick, calling him a faggot in the school cafeteria. The ensuing fight and its aftermath demonstrate how societal pressures force some to deny their true selves. In one of the novel's most poignant moments, Patrick, devastated by his breakup with Brad, kisses Charlie. Charlie allows it not out of attraction, but out of compassion, understanding that Patrick needs connection rather than rejection. This nuanced portrayal of sexuality, fluid and deeply intertwined with emotional needs, was groundbreaking for a young adult novel of its time. Throughout the novel, Charlie struggles with undiagnosed mental health issues stemming from childhood trauma. He experiences episodes of dissociation, where nothing seems real, and he struggles to breathe. This condition previously required hospitalization and caused him to be held back a grade. Charlie tries to manage these episodes through various coping mechanisms, reading, writing letters, and later, substance use. Charlie's mental state deteriorates during the Christmas holidays, particularly around his birthday, which coincides with the anniversary of Aunt Helen's death. He reveals that Helen died in a car accident on December 24, 1983, Charlie's seventh birthday, while out buying his birthday present. Charlie carries immense guilt, believing Helen would still be alive if she hadn't gone out in the snow for him. As the novel progresses, Charlie's substance use increases. After being temporarily ostracized by his friends following the Truth or Dare incident, he buys marijuana from Bob and smokes it constantly. Later, he experiments with LSD at a New Year's party, resulting in a frightening episode where he's found by police, pale blue and asleep after making snow angels outside. This incident leads to an emergency room visit and recommendations to see a psychiatrist again. The novel's climactic revelation comes near the end when Charlie has a breakdown after Sam touches him intimately. This triggers repressed memories of sexual abuse by his Aunt Helen, who molested him when he was a child. Charlie is hospitalized for 2 months, during which he processes this trauma with the help of doctors. The revelation recontextualizes Charlie's relationship with his aunt and explains many of his psychological struggles throughout the novel. Chbosky's portrayal of trauma and mental health is remarkably nuanced for a young adult novel. He shows how unresolved trauma can manifest in seemingly unrelated ways, how mental health struggles don't follow a linear path to recovery, and how healing often requires facing painful truths we've buried deep within ourselves. Books and music serve as lifelines for Charlie throughout the novel. His English teacher, Bill, recognizes Charlie's intelligence and provides him with additional books beyond a curriculum. To Kill a Mockingbird, The Catcher in the Rye, On the Road, Naked Lunch, Walden, and The Fountainhead. These books become Charlie's companions during his isolation, helping him process his complex emotions and connect with characters who feel as deeply as he does. When Charlie reads The Catcher in the Rye, he identifies strongly with Holden Caulfield, another adolescent struggling to find authenticity in a world that often feels phony. After his temporary estrangement from his friends, Charlie reads the book 3 times in succession to distract himself from his emotions. Literature provides Charlie with both escape and insight, a way to understand his own experiences through the lens of other stories. Music plays an equally important role in Charlie's emotional landscape. He creates thoughtful mixtapes for friends, carefully selecting songs that capture specific moods or experiences. For Patrick's Secret Santa gift, Charlie creates a mixtape called One Winter with 2 distinct sides. Upbeat songs by Village People, Blondie, and Nirvana on one side, and melancholic winter songs by The Smiths, Simon & Garfunkel, and The Beatles on the other. Charlie hopes this second side will comfort Patrick when he's driving alone and feeling sad. The novel's most iconic scene involves music. Sam standing in the back of her pickup truck while driving through the Fort Pitt Tunnel as Landslide plays on the radio. This moment represents perfect unity between music, emotion, and experience, creating what Charlie describes as feeling infinite. Through Charlie's engagement with books and music, Chbosky illustrates how art helps us process our emotions, connect with others, and find meaning in our experiences. For isolated teenagers like Charlie, these cultural touchstones can become lifelines, ways to feel less alone in the world and to understand the complex emotions of adolescence. Family plays a complex role in Charlie's life, simultaneously providing support and contributing to his struggles. His immediate family, parents, brother, and sister, clearly love him but often fail to recognize the depth of his emotional needs. His mother cries easily and worries constantly. His father works hard but struggles to express emotion. His brother is physically absent at college, and his sister oscillates between protectiveness and irritation toward Charlie. The novel reveals a pattern of generational trauma in Charlie's extended family. During Christmas at his grandmother's house in Ohio, Charlie learns about his family history. His grandmother's abusive second husband, who was eventually beaten to death by his great-uncle Phil, his Aunt Rebecca's pattern of abusive relationships, and how his father escaped this cycle by leaving home. Charlie understands why his father had to leave, seeing his old bedroom and feeling the weight of family trauma. This generational trauma culminates in the revelation about Aunt Helen, who was molested by a family friend as a child. When she told her father, Charlie's grandfather, he didn't believe her, leading to a life of substance abuse, relationship problems, and hospital stays. Helen eventually moved in with Charlie's family and began improving her life until her fatal car accident. The cycle continues when Helen, herself a victim, sexually abuses Charlie. Trauma begetting trauma across generations. Despite these dysfunctions, Charlie's family demonstrates resilience and love. When his sister becomes pregnant and needs an abortion, Charlie supports her without judgment, sitting in the clinic waiting room and helping her keep the secret from their parents. His parents, though imperfect, respond with compassion when they learn about Charlie's abuse, with his mother crying and his father expressing anger on Charlie's behalf. The novel suggests that while we cannot choose where we come from or what happens to us, we can choose how to respond and whether to perpetuate or break cycles of trauma. As Charlie realizes toward the end, we can't choose where we come from, but we can choose where we go from there. The tension between participation and observation forms a central theme in Charlie's development throughout the novel. As the title suggests, Charlie embodies the classic wallflower, someone who watches life unfold from the periphery rather than actively engaging in its flow. His English teacher, Bill, recognizes this pattern and confronts it directly, challenging Charlie by asking if he thinks too much instead of participating in life. This question becomes a recurring motif that echoes throughout Charlie's journey of self-discovery. Charlie's letters reveal his extraordinary gift for observation, demonstrating both the blessing and curse of his heightened awareness. He notices subtle details that others overlook, the way his former friend Susan's laugh changed over summer from genuine to performative, how Patrick actually watches the football games while others treat them as mere social events, and how his mother's frantic shopping cart pushing matches the rhythm of her anxious chatter. These keen observations make Charlie uniquely perceptive, but simultaneously create an invisible barrier between him and authentic experiences. His tendency to analyze rather than engage keeps him perpetually one step removed from genuine connection. When Sam and Patrick enter Charlie's life, they serve as catalysts for his transformation from observer to participant. They actively pull him into experiences he would typically avoid. Raucous parties where he learns to dance without self-consciousness, impromptu performances in the Rocky Horror Picture Show where he steps in as Rocky despite his stage fright, Friday night football games where he finally feels part of a community, and social experiments with drugs and alcohol that both enlighten and frighten him. These experiences, while often overwhelming for Charlie's sensitive nature, represent crucial steps in his journey from passive witness to active participant in his own life. The novel's most profound moments emerge when Charlie fully commits to participation. Standing in the back of Patrick's pickup truck in the tunnel, feeling infinite with the wind in his face, instinctively jumping into the cafeteria fight to defend Patrick without calculating the consequences. Supporting his sister through her abortion with quiet strength rather than judgment, and ultimately facing his buried trauma in therapy. These moments of full engagement, though sometimes accompanied by pain or fear, become the cornerstones of his personal growth and deeper human connections. By the novel's conclusion, Charlie achieves a delicate balance between his observational nature and his newfound ability to participate. His final letters suggest he might be too occupied with participating to write as frequently, indicating a healthier engagement with direct experience. However, he retains the sensitive perception and emotional intelligence that define his character. The novel ultimately suggests that true personal growth doesn't require abandoning our fundamental nature, but rather learning to navigate between observation and participation. Knowing when to remain the perceptive witness and when to step boldly into the spotlight of active engagement. The novel concludes with Charlie's journey toward healing after confronting the truth about his childhood sexual abuse. After his breakdown, Charlie spends 2 months in the hospital working with doctors to process his trauma. He describes this period as difficult but necessary, particularly when the doctor tells his parents what happened to him. His mother cries, his father expresses anger, and Charlie realizes they never knew about the abuse. During his hospitalization, Charlie receives support from various visitors. His family comes regularly, Patrick keeps things normal with his jokes, and he receives supportive letters from relatives. Mary Elizabeth visits with their friends before leaving for Berkeley, and Bill comes with his fiancée. These connections remind Charlie that he's not alone in his healing process. The turning point comes when Charlie realizes there's nobody to hate anymore. He could blame his grandfather for hitting Helen or the family friend who abused her when she was young, but that cycle of blame leads nowhere. Instead, Charlie embraces the truth that while we can't choose where we come from, but we can choose where we go from there. This realization marks Charlie's transition from victim to survivor, someone who acknowledges his past trauma but refuses to be defined by it. After his release from the hospital, Charlie experiences a moment of profound healing when Sam and Patrick take him through the tunnel again. As they approach, Charlie reflects on everyone who's told him he matters. Bill saying he was special, his sister and parents saying they loved him, Patrick calling him his friend, and Sam telling him to really be there. He cries and smiles simultaneously, feeling a complex mix of emotions. Love for his Aunt Helen despite what she did, desire for his mother's present to be special, and wanting everyone to be happy. The novel ends with Charlie standing in the tunnel with the wind on his face, really there, feeling infinite. He writes that tomorrow he starts sophomore year without fear, and though he might be too busy participating to write more letters, things are good with him, and even when they're not, they will be soon enough. This conclusion offers hope without denying the reality of ongoing struggles, a nuanced and honest portrayal of healing as a journey rather than a destination. Throughout The Perks of Being a Wallflower, Chomsky explores the messy, complicated, but ultimately beautiful nature of human connection. None of Charlie's relationships are perfect. Each is marked by misunderstandings, disappointments, and limitations. Yet these imperfect connections provide the foundation for Charlie's growth and healing. Charlie's friendship with Sam exemplifies this complexity. He loves her unrequitedly for most of the novel, projecting his needs and desires onto her. When she dates Craig, Charlie silently judges their relationship, believing Craig doesn't truly appreciate Sam and only sees her beauty through his camera lens. Yet when Craig and Sam break up after his infidelity is revealed, Charlie realizes how devastated he feels for Sam without any thought of personal gain, a moment when his love transcends selfishness. Similarly, Charlie's friendship with Patrick evolves through difficult circumstances. After Patrick's painful breakup with Brad, Charlie becomes his primary support, listening to his stories, accompanying him to gay cruising spots, and even allowing Patrick to kiss him when he needs connection. Though their relationship becomes temporarily unhealthy, with Patrick drinking excessively and Charlie enabling him, it ultimately strengthens through these challenges. Even Charlie's family relationships, though flawed, provide essential support. His sister oscillates between protecting Charlie and being irritated by him, yet she's there when he needs her most. His parents don't fully understand his struggles, but respond with love when they learn about his abuse. These connections aren't idealized. They're portrayed with all their complications and limitations. The novel suggests that meaningful connections don't require perfection. They require authenticity, compassion, and willingness to be present through difficulties. When Charlie stands in the tunnel at the end feeling infinite, he's surrounded by friends who've seen him at his worst and loved him anyway. This acceptance of imperfection, in ourselves and others, creates the possibility for genuine connection. As Charlie writes in his final letter, "I know these will all be stories someday, and our pictures will become old photographs. We'll all become somebody's mom or dad. But right now, these moments are not stories. This is happening. And in this moment, I swear, we are infinite. The beauty lies not in perfection, but in the raw, messy, authentic experience of being truly present with others who accept us as we are."